You're listening to an African Elements top news story for June 25, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. Why does the Eastern DRC conflict history refuse to die? In June 2026, the global spotlight shifted to London as representatives from the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Rwanda met to discuss peace. This high-stakes gathering represented the sixth meeting of the Joint Oversight Committee. Under the mediation of the African Union, alongside the United States and Qatar, diplomats scrambled to save a collapsing ceasefire. The situation on the ground in the eastern region of the Congo has reached a dangerous boiling point once again. Heavy clashes between the Congolese National Army and the Rwandan-backed Congo River Alliance have displaced millions of innocent civilians. Furthermore, this escalating violence is occurring alongside a deadly public health emergency in the region. A severe Ebola epidemic is spreading rapidly through active war zones in the eastern provinces. To truly understand why these two nations are constantly at odds, one must look deep into the past. The modern conflict is a product of long-term trauma, foreign resource theft, and historical neglect. Only by analyzing this history can we make sense of the current crisis. The complex relationship between Kinshasa and Kigali traces directly back to the 1994 Rwandan genocide. During that horrific period, Hutu extremists systematically slaughtered nearly 1 million Tutsis and moderate Hutus. When a Tutsi-led rebel force took power to end the slaughter, nearly 2 million Hutu refugees fled into neighboring Zaire. Among those fleeing refugees were members of the Interahamwe militia who had perpetrated the killings. This massive exodus permanently altered the demographics and political landscape of the Eastern Congo. Consequently, these extremist forces regrouped inside the refugee camps of the Eastern Congo. In the year 2000, they officially formed the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, commonly known as the FDLR. Since then, Rwanda has viewed the presence of the FDLR along its border as an existential threat. Kigali has repeatedly used this threat to justify its military operations inside Congolese territory. The failure to disarm this group remains a major source of anger for the Rwandan government. The presence of armed Hutu militias quickly destabilized the weak government in Zaire. In 1996, Rwanda and Uganda invaded Zaire, removing the longtime dictator Mobutu Sese Seko from power. They replaced him with Laurent Désiré Kabila and renamed the nation the Democratic Republic of the Congo. However, this alliance quickly deteriorated when Kabila ordered foreign forces to leave the country. This move deeply angered his former backers in Kigali and Kampala. This betrayal triggered the Second Congo War in 1998, which drew in multiple African nations. Often called Africa's World War, the conflict officially ended with the Pretoria Accord in 2002. Nevertheless, the war permanently fractured the eastern provinces of the nation. To make matters worse, foreign powers began using local proxy militias to exploit the vast mineral wealth of the region. Today, the country still struggles under the weight of Africa's rising debt crisis and ongoing resource exploitation. The March 23rd Movement, or M23, is currently the most formidable proxy force operating in the region. The roots of M23 lie in a 2009 peace agreement signed between the Congolese government and a Tutsi-led militia. When the government failed to uphold its integration promises, Tutsi soldiers mutinied in 2012. Although they were temporarily defeated, the M23 organized a massive resurgence in late 2021. Since then, they have captured vast territories in the North Kivu province. Recently, the conflict evolved further with the creation of the Congo River Alliance, or AFC, in late 2023. Led by Corneille Nangaa, the former electoral chief of the Congo, this alliance unites various rebel groups. By early 2025, the AFC-M23 coalition captured the strategic provincial capitals of Goma and Bukavu. This offensive displaced hundreds of thousands of people and brought both nations to the brink of conventional war. The central government in Kinshasa has struggled to contain this aggressive military push. In an effort to prevent an all-out regional war, international diplomats stepped in with intense mediation. On June 27, 2025, the foreign ministers of both nations signed a peace treaty in Washington. This was followed by a historic meeting on December 4, 2025, hosted by the United States President. Known as the Washington Accords, the treaty established a clear, bilateral trade-off between the two neighbors. Under this framework, Rwanda agreed to withdraw its troops and stop supporting the M23. In return, the Congolese government promised to dismantle the Hutu extremist FDLR. However, both sides have struggled to implement these commitments on the ground, leading to the emergency talks in London. Many peace initiatives in the region have turned into failed political promises because of a lack of deep international enforcement and trust. The driving force behind the ongoing violence is the illegal exploitation of critical minerals. Eastern Congo is home to massive deposits of coltan, a metallic ore refined into tantalum. Tantalum is essential for making capacitors used in smartphones, laptops, and electric vehicles. The Rubaya mining hub alone produces about 15% of the global supply. This makes it one of the most valuable resources in the entire world. The Rwanda-backed M23 rebel group seized control of these lucrative mines to fund its military operations. Smugglers launder the coltan through Goma and into Rwanda, where it enters the global market. From there, international smelters process the mineral before selling it to major technology companies. Consequently, devices manufactured by global brands like Apple and Sony are directly linked to this humanitarian crisis. The appetite of the West for new electronics keeps the cycle of violence fully funded. The Banyamulenge are a Congolese Tutsi minority living in the South Kivu Highlands. Despite living in the region for centuries, they are often targeted as foreign invaders. Their basic rights and safety were stripped away by discriminatory citizenship laws. Specifically, a 1981 law restricted nationality to those whose ancestors lived in the country before 1885. This law was designed to exclude them from participating in political life. This legal exclusion has made them highly vulnerable to ethnic violence and displacement. Between 2017 and 2021, local militias burned more than 300 Banyamulenge villages to the ground. UN monitors have documented horrific atrocities against them, including summary executions and sexual violence. The struggle of this community highlights how the shackles of colonialism still define citizenship and identity in modern Africa. Without legal protection, they remain at the mercy of hostile armed groups. The National Military of the Congo, known as the FARDC, faces severe operational challenges. Rebuilt in 2003, the FARDC integrated various former rebel groups and government soldiers. This hasty integration created a fragmented force with little internal discipline or cohesion. To fight the M23, the military has relied on loose alliances with local armed groups. These temporary coalitions often do more harm than good for local communities.
Unfortunately, the FARDC also has a highly troubled human rights record. State forces and their allied militias have been implicated in severe abuses against civilians. These actions include looting, torture, and widespread sexual violence in conflict zones. These internal failures make it incredibly difficult for the central government to protect its citizens or secure its borders. Consequently, the local population has lost almost all faith in the national military. Compounding the misery of war, a terrifying public health emergency has struck the region. On May 15, 2026, the World Health Organization declared an Ebola epidemic in northeastern Congo. This outbreak is caused by the rare Bundibugyo strain, which has a high fatality rate. Unlike the common Zaire strain, there are currently no approved vaccines for the Bundibugyo species. Healthcare workers must rely entirely on basic supportive care to save patients. The active conflict has made containing the deadly virus almost impossible. Armed groups have attacked and burned down several healthcare centers, forcing medical workers to flee. As a result, contact tracers are struggling to reach infected individuals in crowded displacement camps. Over 1,000 cases have been confirmed, making this a rapid and dangerous health crisis. The intersection of war and disease is creating a massive humanitarian disaster. In the face of dual crises, local Congolese civil society has stepped up to save lives. Community health workers are utilizing digital tools to track Ebola cases in remote areas. Because local populations often mistrust outside organizations, grassroots volunteers are essential for building trust. They provide door-to-door education to combat dangerous misinformation about the disease. Their dedication is keeping the outbreak from spreading even faster. Furthermore, local groups are providing psychological counseling to families affected by the violence. Unarmed civilian protection networks gather early warning data to keep communities safe from incoming attacks. The incredible strength and resilience shown by these local organizations is the true backbone of survival in the Eastern Congo. Their tireless efforts prove that real change must come from the ground up, even when political leaders fail to find peace in distant capitals. Copyright, African Elements.